Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Baseball Live. We're here every Sunday evening talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking whatever the heck we want to talk about. We've got a great show planned for you this evening as we hit Memorial Day here in the U.S., usually a time to take umbrage of your team to see how things are going. And I don't know about you guys. I'm having a really good season. I'm in first place in two leagues, in five leagues. In the money in two, well, I'm in the money in another league and close to the money with the fourth league and completely out of it in the fifth league. And that's my NFBC team, which is just underperformed and been hit by injuries. But then, of course, one of the teams, leagues that I'm in, I'm leading by 30 points as Mike Trout. I am getting on my hands and knees this evening, praying to the baseball, fantasy baseball gods in particular, that there's nothing seriously wrong with Mike Trout's thumb. So you never, you know, it could be anything from a sprain to tearing his UCL on his thumb. We've seen that happen a lot. If that's the case, he's going to be gone for a while. So, again, fingers crossed and hoping good thoughts. Tim will be joining us in a few minutes. Just a couple of housekeeping items. If you want to get a hold of us, the best way to do that, at least for me, is on the Twitter, at RichWilsonP361, at RichWilsonP361. P361, of course, you get the great Tim O'Cloud at Timothy LMC. And it's interesting, I was just watching the start of the Sunday Night Baseball game, and they were interviewing Tyler Glasnow, and he showed his lip. And on his lip, he has gotten tattooed the words "no juice," which apparently, from what I could tell from the interview, was some reference to an old dirty bastard rap artist's song. I have deep concerns about Tyler Glasnow. That must have hurt like there's no tomorrow to get "no juice" tattooed on your inside of your lip. Seems insane to me. Otherwise, it was a great interview. It seemed like a fine young man. I have talked to him, but I didn't get a chance to ask him when I spoke to him about 3 years ago whether he had "no juice" tattooed on the inside of his lip. Crazy, crazy stuff. And as maybe we could get the great Tim O'Cloud's impression of that. Timmy, did you just hear that? Tyler Glasnow with a tattoo of "no juice" on the inside of his lip.
Yeah, you know, I'll do impressions of Elvis, but I will not do impressions of tattoos on his inner lips, Rich. Ain't happening.
That's got to hurt. I mean, my son's got tattoos all over him. There's a kid going to Ivy League schools and he's got tattoos all over him. Who knew? But I know they hurt because he tells me they hurt. I can't even imagine. That's like incredibly sensitive.
Yeah, the only tattoo I've ever had anything to do with was on Fantasy Island, Rich. That's for me.
Absolutely. Timmy, how are you? How's your week been?
Good, Rich. I'm feeling good. Life is good. Today was sort of sucked. I've been having internet problems off and on all day. I don't know if my provider paid their bill, but it's been sporadic, so I'm struggling a little bit today with the net. But other than that, life's real good. You?
Yeah, but Tim's good. We went to the Memorial Day parade, which is supposed to be tomorrow, the neighboring town had theirs on Saturday, which was great. It was awesome. But I got to tell you, they had a program like with all the different floats, 91 floats, pretty nice. The last float said, "And we have a surprise for you." So Lori looked at me and she says, "You don't think Santa Claus is coming out?" Because that's what they do with those Christmas parades all the time. You know, Santa or Thanksgiving Day parade, Santa Claus comes out. Tim, I kid you not, it is Memorial Day. And in the town of Morris Plains, one town over about 3 miles from my house, that in fact, Santa Claus was in the last float. But come on, now, that's not right.
That is totally wrong. Santa should not be allowed to appear in a float until everybody has paid their visas from the prior year's Christmas. It's still way too early, Rich. Way too early. You want a good choice for a float in a parade? My option is always Dairy Queen. How's that?
Absolutely, Timmy. I have Lori has me on a new diet though, so this is a cleansing diet. So I've been having my whole life, Timmy. I've had a lot of digestive issues, just a nervous stomach, if you will, a lot of heartburn and so forth. And so she's been on something called Whole 30, which is an awful diet, Timmy. You can't eat grains. You can't eat, grains. You can't eat any dairy, so no milk or cheese, no sweets, no processed foods. And I feel great, Timmy. I've been on it for a week and feel absolutely great. I'm hungry all the time, but I feel absolutely great.
So you can have pretty well any type of water that you choose?
Absolutely. Water and meat, Tim. That's pretty much it. No bread and water. I got meat and water. So, like, you know, I said we had fish tonight for dinner, but at lunch today we had a meatball and salad. So,
a meatball, Rich? A?
I had Lori and I went to a little restaurant that's across the street. Had three turkey meatballs, and we split them down the middle. And, Tim, I was hungry in about an hour later, but they were delicious.
I mean, I was gonna say it sounds pretty much like a starvation diet, Rich.
It's very, very popular, right? So a lot of people are on it. But I tell you, Tim, I feel great. Lost about 5 pounds. Not that I need to lose any weight, but, yeah, always good to lose a few pounds. And, guess what? That heartburn for the first time, and I can remember, actually don't have any. So I'm feeling really, really good. So Whole 30, Whole 30. So that's been my week, Timmy. I've been consumed by thinking of food.
Well, based on what you told me constitutes this diet, I'm thinking it could be a trend over the next while, Rich. Good luck with it.
Yeah, 30 days and I'm out. But I'm also, Timmy, I got to tell you, at the top of the show, I'm on my hands and knees praying to the dear fantasy gods that Michael Trout is not seriously injured.
Well, yeah, you happen to own him in DL2, don't you?
I do indeed, Timmy, and I think I've been able to weather the loss of Freddie Freeman in that league. I ain't going to be able to weather the loss of, you know, a 6 to 8 week loss of Michael Trout, and if he tore his UCL, it could even be longer than that. So, I mean, I got fingers and toes crossed and everything else.
Well, yeah, you don't replace a player of Mike Trout's caliber. It just simply doesn't happen. And let's hope for everyone's sake, including Mr. Trout, that we get some good news. And it's more along the lines of an Asdrubal Cabrera-type thumb injury as compared to the worst scenario.
Yeah, absolutely, Timmy. On my bench, you know who takes his place? Your boy, your buddy, the Cowboy Calhoun. I mean, that, you talk about a drop. It's Cowboy Calhoun replaces Michael Trout. That's not a fair replacement.
Well, being that I'm in DL2 and sucking it up about 40 points behind you, I'm okay with that, Rich. I can live with it, okay? Just in that one league, though.
Timmy, it is the Memorial Day, and you know, in the U.S. And do you have an analogous holiday in Canada where you basically celebrate and memorialize people in the armed forces, or in particular people who have perished in the call of duty? Do you have a holiday as such that?
Yeah, we do. We celebrate Remembrance Day, November 11th. That's our holiday. You have both. We just have the Remembrance Day, Rich.
Yeah, we've got Memorial Day, then we have Veterans Day, and usually they wind up somewhat one and the same. You know, officially they're different, but you recognize people in the armed forces on both days. But Memorial Day, Timmy, as you know, is really celebrates also the unofficial start of the summer holiday. So a lot of people go to the beach or go to the lake or whatever.
Right.
But it's also a chance that the third mark, you know, we're about 2 months into the 6 months journey of fantasy baseball, and it's really a time to reflect on our teams to find out, like, what's going well, how do we keep a team going, and how do we what changes do we make? So we're going to talk a lot about that this evening.
Yeah, it sounds like fun, and definitely, when looking at my teams, some changes have to occur, Rich. It's been a struggle.
Yeah, so part of the topic today is I've sent Tim a list of questions. I'm going to interview Tim on strategies because he is the wizard of fantasy baseball, and we're going to ask him a bunch of questions about, like, what happens when you're doing well, what happens when you're not doing well, and Tim and I will debate about that a little bit. But, Tim, I want to start off the broadcast with just one of my favorite games, fill in the blank. So here it is. It's Memorial Day, and blank is just not the player I thought.
I'm going with Nick Castellanos. He's been a huge, huge disappointment thus far. And, you know, on top of the fact that he's struggling with the bat, he's struggling with the glove too. It's an all-around struggle. And I really thought we were going to see a breakout-type year by Nick Castellanos. But as each day passes, my hopes seem to fade a little bit, Rich.
We talked about him last week and talked about his hard hit rate. And then somebody, I'm looking, tweeted back out to me about Nick Castellanos and Castellanos, or I don't know if you pronounce the L's or not, but and just how bad he has been. Now, Timmy, do you own Mr. Castellanos?
In virtually every league, yes. I'm consistent with my evaluation of Castellanos heading into the season. I own him everywhere, Rich.
So what does one do, Tim? Do you stick with him, or do you try to replace him? And what have you done in some of the leagues where you own him? Are you just rolling him out there and crossing the fingers and hoping for the best?
Well, you know, since I had my health issues, I'm now on a lot of medications, so alcohol is not the answer, unfortunately. That would be my first choice. But with Castellanos right now, I'm living with it, hoping he turns it around. Simply because in a lot of these leagues, I don't have, especially the dynasty leagues, I don't have replacements at the ready. That you can just slot in there. So crossing my fingers, hoping for better days ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you, Timmy. I was trying to stall for some I can't remember what the guy said about Castellanos, but it wasn't good. It was like swinging strike rate was the highest in the league. I mean, just the plate discipline is poor. I think his Babbitt was – I mean, everything is negative. He might be hitting the ball hard, Timmy, but he's not hitting it enough, and just really ugly stuff. Mine is pretty much a chip shot. I know he had just hit a home run. And that's Andrew McCutchen. Andrew McCutchen is just not the same player. And fortunately, I don't own him in any leagues, and I was able to get out of Andrew McCutchen a couple of dynasty leagues over the last year or two, and just dumb luck because I thought he still had something left in him. But the speed has come back a little bit this year, but, man, that batting average and his plate discipline is just not the same.
No, he's developed to the stage now where he has excellent warning track power. How's that?
Yeah, I know. It is encouraging to see that he is actually running a little bit more, because I know that was your concern this year.
Yeah, it was. And I guess how much is enough out of McCutchen? What are you going to get, 15 to 20 stolen bases probably? Maybe 15 home runs? That's a long way from the first-round pick that he once was.
Yeah, and, you know, former MVP. And it's just, like, what happened to me? I mean, did he just get old that quickly? He cut his hair? Was he like Samson and shouldn't have cut his hair?
Well, he's just not aging very gracefully, Rich. I think there's some nagging injuries, but you know, I watched him a little earlier in the year trying to steal second, and he's just not that fast anymore. He is definitely down a full notch in the speed department, and that makes a huge difference. You start losing that little edge, and all of a sudden he was never blindingly fast in the first place, but he's definitely very mortal right now, as far as I'm concerned, on the base pass.
The only good news is his batting average of balls in play is .228, so that batting average .212 will hopefully come up to the .240, .250 range, but you're probably looking at a 15-15 player and just not the same guy. So, Timmy, it's Memorial Day, and Nick Castellanos is not the same player I thought, but blank is the player I thought he would be. Timmy, I'm looking for somebody that everybody – not everybody. A lot of people were skeptical, but you stood steadfast. And blank is the player I thought he would be.
Devon Travis. I like Travis.
That's great.
End of the year. And you know what? I'm gonna attempt to pat myself on the back without straining any muscles here, Rich. I believed in him. I own him on virtually every team, and I lived with that dreadful April, hoping that it was a product of basically knocking the rust off and missing spring training. And since we've changed the months from April to May, we've seen an incredible resurgence by Travis, and I'm glad I stuck it out and held to my beliefs.
I think it's a great call, Timmy, and I applaud you on that, because I know you own him in a lot of leagues, and I know you do. Everything you said is absolutely true, and you know, it's a fine baseball player and a guy that actually didn't have a lot of fanfare going through the minor leagues. I actually saw him in the Arizona Fall League. I remember writing him up after the Arizona Fall League, going, "Well, I think this guy's got something," but I didn't realize he would be this good.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be. Like, I think this month he's got 15 doubles, okay? He's leading all of baseball. I don't think he is going to be as good as what we've seen, but he's definitely an awful lot better than what we saw in April. And I think he's going to be a good, solid middle infielder on your fantasy squads moving forward.
Yeah, 4 home runs, 4 stolen bases. Strikeout rate's 18.2%. Okay, that walk rate, he's very, very aggressive at the plate. Timmy, only 4% walk rate. Babbitt's 286, so that 250 batting average overall should see a little bit more push up. So, I mean, still, I think goodness is to come.
Well, yeah, you know, when you look, I think he was about 30 points below the Mendoza line heading into May. So getting it up to 250 this quick is definitely a reflection on how good his May has been. But I do agree with the walk rate. But right now, one of the reasons he's not walking is he's seeing everything so good. He's simply tearing the cover off the ball. And I think the walk rate will improve as his streak slows down, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. My guy is Kota Glover, Tim. I've been talking about this guy for well over a year, for anybody else did. And I a lot of naysayers out there. The Sean Kelly experiment started and ended. The Blake Treyon experiment ended and started. Potential relievers coming in to take his place. We heard everything from David Robertson, Kevin Herrera, and they all might come in, Timmy, but Dusty Baker and the Washington Brass all want Kota Glover to become the closer. He finally is the closer. Timmy, he looks awfully good to me.
Yeah, he looks awfully good to me, and I invested some cheap money in Sean Kelly, but lurking in the back of my mind all along was Kota Glover, and I do own him in 3 or 4 leagues, held on to him, and I'm very happy I did. Good call, Rich.
Yeah, again, it was one of those scouting trips where I got an email from somebody, I can't tell you who I did, and asked me what I knew about Kota Glover, and if I had a chance to see him the next week or two, could I please write up a report for him? And I quickly made an effort to see him. Really was impressed. That was that first. I actually added him to all my dynasty league teams. That's the first thing I did, Timmy. Let's be real here. Then I went to work.
So. Okay. I have that problem every once in a while. I'll put out the waiver wire, or I'll get on the Facebook page and start talking about somebody, and being, you know, not even thinking about it, I won't bother adding him to my teams right away, and then I'll go to look a couple of weeks later, and he was snagged 10 minutes after I mentioned him somewhere. So that's not a bad strategy to have, Rich. It isn't.
Nope. I've done that a lot, Timmy. I did that on Jose Altuve about 5 or 6 years ago. I was sort of talking about him. I added him all because all of these guys don't even exist on the CBS. When we play on Dynasty, don't even exist on the CBS player pool. So you grab them and then you start talking about them because we got sharks, man. You'll mention a guy and boom, he'll be off the player pool. And like, oh, I should have grabbed him. So that's what you got to do, Timmy.
Well, you know, it's sort of nice that people listen to you, but it's nice when you listen to yourself too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Timmy, blank, I'm looking for a team here. Blank has surprised me the most this year.
I got to go with the Colorado Rockies. You know, I thought they were going to have offense, but the Rockies have pitching, and John Gray hasn't contributed to it. I really didn't expect, and I don't think anybody could ever expect to see what we've seen thus far from the Colorado Rockies rotation. So they get my vote.
Do you think, just the name, I wanted to say Buddy Bell, but that's not it. The new manager for the Colorado Rockies has made a difference. He was always great in San Diego with that young pitching staff.
Well, I think the one thing that I'm seeing that is a little bit different is the guys are getting up there and they're throwing strikes. I don't see the concern, per se, in the past about the breaking balls, but, you know, hey, if you throw the ball over the plate in a half-decent location, you know, your defense can help. And I just like the way these kids are rearing back and firing the thing, and they're getting results. And maybe what has happened this year, and it's just me surmising, is, you know, the manager simply said, hey, get up there and throw the ball. Okay. Yeah. Like, don't worry about the curveball not curving or the breaking stuff not working the way. Just get up there and fire it. You got a defense behind you. And so far, it seems like the fact that they are throwing the ball over the plate and they're getting strikes, it's worked well. Again,
yeah,
just surprise on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good call to me. It would be Bud Black. I said Buddy Bell to me. It's funny when you start talking off the top of your head, it's you don't remember everything. And, you know, it's interesting. They've been doing it all with Nolan Arenado having a really good season, but not the kind of season he's had the last couple of years. So, it's all about the pitching, and I think it's all about Greg Holland. And Greg Holland's just had a remarkable season, even though he gave up a run today. He's 19 saves already, Tim, which is just remarkable.
Sell high, Rich. Sell high.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I agree with you. I think because I think his arm's going to fall off. My team is the Diamondbacks. I mean, I'm going to stay out at the NL West, and Zach Greinke has looked a lot better. I know he didn't pitch very well last night, but the offense led by Paul Goldschmidt, Timmy, who is really, really good. I mean, really good.
Yeah.
This guy can – he's going to steal 20 bases this year, and he might even steal 30 bases this year. He could be a 30-30 contributor at first base and bat 300 and knock in 110 runs. I mean, this guy's a monster. And if he does 30-30 at the first base side, I would – there's an argument, even though it's Michael Trout at number one, there's an argument that Paul Goldschmidt is not a dumb idea to pick number one overall next year.
Well, he's definitely number two at the worst. And I'm sort of kicking myself, but I really didn't have much say in this because the Diamondbacks actually, they haven't surprised me. I actually picked them. I, if you can remember going back into January, February, remember I said if you had an extra 20 or 30 bucks or whatever, slap it down on the Diamondbacks. And unfortunately, I had a health issue come up, or I would have done exactly that. So I'm sort of kicking myself there because there was money to be made on Arizona, and I saw that one coming. I believed in them early on, and I'm glad to see that they're playing to the level that I saw possible.
Now, Tony La Russa and company, Tim, took a absolute beating in their 2 years, and I was on the these guys got to go, they don't know what they're doing train. I mean, and we can look to a bunch of bad trades that they made. Having said that, if they make the playoffs this year, are they somewhat exonerated from, you know, kind of what they did, because it's all their moves that are playing out?
No, Dave Stewart's still a dumbass, Rich.
I mean, I get that, Timmy. I you know, he made that Swanson move, and of course Shelby Miller, you know, blows out his elbow. But I mean, Dansby Swanson has been terrible this year. But I mean, they did sign Zach Greinke. He's having a good year, and you know, at some point you have to give them a little bit of props. And I was not defending them at all. I was on the crucify them.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking it from the opposite perspective. Now that they're gone, it's a weight and a burden off the team's shoulders, and they're playing better as a result. How's that?
I think that's another way to look at it, probably the right way to look at it. Number four, Timmy, I think blank June call-up will add value to my team.
Well, yeah. I keep looking at Philadelphia, and I think they're very, very close to being 0 for May And I look at OW1 Herrera, okay, with his 471 OPS. He's 5-for-48 since the middle of May with no countables. Roman Quinn's got to get the call one of these days, doesn't he? Like, I mean, anything's an improvement. How long do they live with Herrera? I'm still on the Roman Quinn train. I think something has to happen in Philadelphia, a spark. Somebody brought up, I don't know if it's going to be Quinn or maybe Hoskins, but something has to happen, and I'm going to go with Roman Quinn.
I'm a huge fan of Roman Quinn, but Odubel Herrera, to me, I did not realize he isn't that big of a slump. I mean, down to 222, he never walks, so 49 strikeouts, 11 walks, 3 home runs, 4 stolen bases. Wow, he is a shell of himself that he was last year. It's funny, he walked 63 times last year. So it's pretty unusual that all of a sudden his ability to control the strike zone has gone away. But didn't he sign a fairly, not a lucrative contract, but he signed a long 4 or 5 year contract, Timmy?
Well, yeah, he did. But how long do you live with 5-for-48 and no countables? At some point in time, something has to change in Philadelphia. And I just think that at some point in time, Herrera's going to ride the pine if he doesn't turn it around. They're not going to sit forever. And for that reason, I'm going with my prediction of Quinn. I could be out to lunch, but something has to give in Philly.
I mean, I could see Hoskins up as well. I think we talked about this in the waiver wire that as poorly as Tommy Joseph has played, Hoskins could be in playing first base very soon. And, you know, Aaron Althea has been very good. We're still waiting for Howie Kendrick to come back, I believe. But Michael Saunders, is that a guy that gets you excited? I could see a scenario that Roman Quinn's going to be a far superior center fielder than Odubel Herrera. I could see Roman Quinn coming up, Herrera moving over to a corner along with Althea, and Howie Kendrick move. I could see that scenario. So I completely agree with you that Roman Quinn will be up sometime after June. I don't know if Herrera is going to ride the pine, though.
Yeah, maybe it's just the fact that I own him in too many leagues has jaded my opinion there. But if he were to ride the pine right about now, he'd be doing me a favor, Richard.
Yeah, mine's on a similar tack, and that is, I think the Mets have pitching problems. I get it, but Ahmed Rosario, Tammy, there's nothing left for this guy to do, and there's been lots of hints and rumors that they will call him up at, you know, they're waiting for the June 20th or so to come up, so get that Super 2 status off the books and then call him up, because they're still being burned by the Bernie Madoff thing. By the way, Tammy, saw the Bernie Madoff movie, the HBO movie that they made starring Robert De Niro over the saw it last night, and Fred Wilpon was definitely in the movie, somebody playing Fred Wilpon lost a lot of his money, and so they're not going to call up any earlier than they need to.
Was that a low or a high budget movie, Rich?
That's funny. It was I thought it was dull. I did not learn anything new, and it was almost like here's a guy, I mean, and De Niro played him fairly well. He's a sociopath. I mean, that's what they were trying to get at you. He really, from what learned from the movie, last stock trade he had made was like 15 years prior to when everything came crashing down. And essentially, he just would take your money, and if I needed my money back, he would give your money to my money, you know, to give it to me until he ran out of money. He wasn't investing any of it. He was just literally moving to one person to the next and then taking a cut for himself.
Well, yeah, and my guess is the cut for himself was probably close to 100% of, less what he had to pay his office staff or whatever. Yeah, no, it's the only thing that gives me cause and pause to shake my head is, anytime, Rich, that you see something that appears to be too good to be true, odds are pretty good that it is. And from what I can gather, the rates that he was promising on his returns, sometimes safe versus greedy, there's some merit in that. And I think a lot of people that got stung in a big way It was pure greed, and they paid for that greed.
It's interesting. That's what Robert De Niro playing Bernie Madoff said. He goes, people that were hurt the most were the ones who were greedy, just wanting to get those big returns. But then he wanted to scream, but you were the one that was promising bogus returns. But he was promising positive returns in the financial crisis, which, you know, Timmy, which occurred in 2007 and 8, you know, when, you know, the whole mortgage market blew off, and it pretty much, we came, if you watched like The Big Short and read about it, we came like from a whisker from the entire economy completely blowing up in the U.S. It was that bad. And yet he was telling his clients, I got you, that's okay. We're earning 15% this year, not the 30% we earned last year, but 15%. Everybody else is losing like 50% of their money, and he's making people money, but yet they still invested in them. And it was, and the Wilpons were one of those, and they're still trying to dig out, Timmy.
Well, yeah, and bonds, that has to be greed, isn't it? It's not like they were hurting in the first place, right?
Yeah. Well, the average annual return for the S&P 500 over the years is anywhere between 6 and 7%. So if you want to be a passive investor, just throw $1,000 into the S&P low fee that follows the S&P index, you're going to make 6 or 7% every year return over the course of 20 years. That's what you're comparing
right.
yourself against. So if you've got somebody that's promised you 15 to 20 to 30% annually over that same period of time, back to the great Tim McLeod, you have to go, that doesn't sound right, because I can't be that good. Nobody's that good.
Well, no. Check to see how much sand he sold to the Arabs or snow to the Eskimos, right?
Last question, Timmy. Biggest first-round bust is blank.
Oh, well, I'm going to save the doozy for you. And I'm going to go with two players that basically haven't played in Josh Donaldson and Madison Bumgarner. At 11 and 14. Now, I know it's injury related, but they're still a bust. You still invested in them. You were still expecting a return. And for teams that invested in Donaldson and Bumgarner, that's putting you in an awful big hole to start the season.
Let's say the worst case scenario, Michael Trout's loss for the year. Michael Trout a bust in the first round?
No, he's already earned something.
Yeah. Well, one could argue that Josh Donaldson's got 4 months to earn something, and Madison Bumgarner's probably got another 2 months to earn something. I get your point. A total bust, and it puts you in such a hole that when you lose your first-round pick, sometimes you just lose interest because you don't feel like you'll ever be able to dig out of it. That's why losing something at the beginning of the season is a lot worse at the end of the season, because if you're winning, at least you're still fighting. Sometimes you just give up the will to fight.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, as you progress into the summer and the fall, your odds of securing help off the waiver wire improve significantly because, let's face it, teams lose interest, football starts, summer vacations, a million things come into play. Losing somebody later in the season doesn't nearly have the same drastic effect, I believe, as losing them early. And, you know, here's another name you could toss in there as well, as Manny Machado. You know, hey, power numbers
terrible.
Look good, but the .225 batting average, that hurts.
It hurts. And part of it, there's so few players who give you the batting average or the on-base percentage that you need that's what the first couple of rounds are supposed to be about. You're supposed to take a guy that's going to has a good chance to bat .300. And when they don't and they bat .220, it hurts. It hurts a lot.
Well, yeah, it does. It's, you know, like another first-rounder that I had penciled in for 60 stolen bases, right?
And my bust is Trey Turner. I do own him in two leagues. You're going to get the stolen bases, Tim. He's already got 11. So let's just say, you know, 35 or 40. You had him for 60. He could easily do, looks like your buddy Gregory Polanco just hit another home run, Tim. Dead center field off of Matthew Harvey. So that's, I think that's two in the last 3 days.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that hitch. He hit one the other day. It appears as if he's got the hitch parked for now.
I think the hitch is still there. But the problem with Trey Turner, that was my only concern about Trey Turner coming into the year, was he never walks. He's very aggressive at the plate. And, you know, if you're playing an on-base percentage league, what kills you is he's got a .244 batting average but a .274 on-base percentage. And if it weren't for Dusty Baker, old-school Dusty Baker, not really understanding, he's speed, so they got to pay him at the top of the lineup. Like a Joe Madden, would he'd be batting ninth. And if somebody wises up, Timmy, he's going to go down in the order, and then you're going to be screwed because then the stolen base opportunities aren't going to be there.
Yeah, it hasn't been a good year for Trey Turner. I'm not ready to wave a white flag yet, but I agree with you. He's got to post an on-base of .330+. And right now he's got some work to do.
22% strikeout rate, 3.6 walk rate. I mean, he's one of the fastest guys in the league. Put him up there, right up there with Billy Hamilton. Love to see those guys race against one another. Timmy, you love the 5 home runs as well. So, you know, I think there's a chance to be a 20-50 player in there. But, dude, you got to walk a little bit more and work the count and get on base more. I mean, that's what you're doing at the top of the lineup.
Well, yeah, it has something to do with my OBP and tote being 14th, Rich. You throw a little Hunter Renfro in there, and it's a recipe for Nightmare on Elm Street. How's that?
Absolutely. Timmy, when we get back, Rich is going to interview Timmy about what the hell to do now. So we're going to try to figure out how to help teams, particularly first in a redraft league. If you're doing poorly, what are some strategies that you can do? If you're doing well, I mean, how do you double down on some things? And just kind of spend the next 10 or 15 minutes interviewing you about what you do in leagues and how you're going to recover. Then we're going to talk about the same thing from a dynasty league standpoint. And I had a great email from a listener who I thought just put out some brilliant questions. A guy who is completely out of it, drafted a young team, is no longer, doesn't think he has a chance to be in the money. What should he do? And I think try to give him some help and a lot of other people that play in dynasty. Timmy, you ready to go?
Sure am, Rich. Fire away.
So let me give you a scenario. So you have a .430 ERA, a .140 whip. This sounds like one of the leagues I'm at, Timmy, my league, my team. They're sitting in 12th place out of 15th in both categories. You need 10 points in order to get your team in the money. Your offense is fine. What do you do?
Well, pending on, you know, on how fine your offense is, you could always look at trying to move some of your offense for pitching. In a redraft format, and I'm doing this actually in one of the listener leagues, the jury put together, I've got problems along those lines. And what I've decided to do is just ramp up my starting pitching, roll them all out there, try to get as much in wins and strikeouts as I possibly can. And so far, it's sort of funny because as I've sort of adopted this philosophy in trying to ramp up to capture wins and strikeouts, my ERA and WHIP have actually fallen to a decent level. You know, I've hit on some pickups that have worked out very, very well. So, you know, hey, just because you're totally hooped in ERA and WHIP, if there's points to be gained in wins, strikeouts, possibly saves, take as much as you can from every other category, and you might be able to find that 10 points.
Yeah, let me ask you, let me dive down a little bit. So one thing about particularly a WHIP and ERA now, because you don't have a lot of innings under you, I noticed in one league, I improved over the last week and a half or two by almost a half a run in ERA and a half of a point in WHIP. I went from a 1.42 to like a 1.37, and all of a sudden I'm starting a 1.33 starts to give me a chance to pass some players in a team that I've got a dynamite offense. So I guess my point is it's still early, and sometimes if you got pitchers that are underperforming, maybe just keep at it, Timmy. Or how about a strategy, and what is your philosophy on this? Do I try to replace some struggling pitchers with a middle reliever who's getting really good ratios? Does that help me at all?
Well, the problem with middle relievers is as you amass innings pitched, the fact that they pitch infrequently and have you know lower overall numbers is cause for it to not affect your qualitatives as much as they do. What I would look at is if I'm very, very strong right now in ERA whip, I would look at potentially adding some middle relievers to protect it more so than try and gain ground, simply because they don't pitch enough, Rich. And the more innings we accumulate, the lesser the effect.
Any specific pitchers, Timmy, that you have your eye on maybe this week or coming up that you think might help your team or might help some of our listeners?
Well, you start looking, like this week coming up, I've mentioned a couple that we'll discuss in the waiver wire, but you got to really like what Donaldson Lamet did for San Diego in his first start. He actually got through five innings, something that many Padres pitchers haven't done lately. Brad Peacock, you know, it's almost impossible to believe, but his ERA and WHIP are both under one, and it looks like he's now moving into the rotation. He's got the Twins and Rangers for two starts this week. Throw a couple bucks down on Brad Peacock and see if you can get two quality starts. If you're still a little bit apprehensive about Rocky starting pitchers, Germaine Marquez is out there, owned to less than 50%. Start speculating on a guy that I love is that I think we're going to see in the next 4 to 6 weeks is Nick Kingham, who's got lost a little bit in the shuffle. So there's always players out there. You just have to be diligent and hope you catch the right ones.
I think the Brad Peacock was interesting. I was about to add him to a couple of leads, but it was before he obviously got the starting gig. And now I got my Sunday waiver wire, and I'm trying to determine he could be a couple hundred bucks because he's now been named as Michael Fiers has been put to the bullpen. He's now your fifth starter for the Astros. Very good team. Pitching lights out in relief. Pitched really good in that spot start. Was a well thought of pitcher coming up through the prospect ranks, coming out of the Washington Nationals organization, if I recall. And so I think he's going to be expensive this weekend.
Yeah, he is. You know, here's a name that many might not like, but pitched a really good game today, and it looks like the arm strength is building up. But I'm still in on Joe Biagini in Toronto. He looked awful good today against Texas, and you know, it's been a struggle getting his innings up to a significant level, but he pitched six today, so I'm not ready to give up on Biagini.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still play a lot of daily fantasy baseball. It was a tough daily fantasy baseball day today because, you know, I loaded up against Bregman with Seattle because he's terrible, and he was just lights out. And then guys like Kershaw against Lester was supposed to be pitcher's duel, and they cost a fortune. So I could pick, and they both got lit up. I mean, particularly Lester, but Kershaw wasn't very good either. And the weird thing about it, the Dodgers never hit lefties, and it was just a weird daily fantasy baseball day.
Well, yeah, it was, and on top of that, everybody and his dog was rested today, so it was really tough probably trying to just put together a team of players with everybody that sat today. It was an incredible number of people took the day off.
Yeah, I know. In Washington, they sat, seemed like everybody. You know, Harper sat, and Daniel Murphy is still got stomach virus or got some kind of flu thing. And so they were the Dusty Baker adage of always resting his stars on Sunday seems to be continuing on that. Timmy, what was your opinion about him taking 3 days off to spend the weekend with his son graduating high school?
Your son only graduates once. Do it.
Family 3 days?
Before work.
3 days?
Hey, you can get away with it, all the more power to you. I'm sure, Rich, you would love to have had 3 days off for the graduations for your kids. I know I would have, and unfortunately I didn't have it, but you can be rest assured if my company would have said to me, or I was in a position where I could say to my company, I'm taking 3 days off for my kid's graduation, I would have done it.
Well, I wonder if this was his son that, I'm assuming maybe it's his grandson, I don't know. Was this the, remember that World Series game where his son was the bat boy, he was like 5 years old, and he ran onto the field, got all confused, ran on the field during the middle of a play, and just about
got
he
almost got posted.
Yeah, at home play. And I forgot who the guy running home was, but literally, Tim, it's an amazing video. It's out on YouTube. He lifted him up by the shirt, picked him up midair, and was running and touching home plate with the kid dangling in air. It's an amazing video. I wonder if that's the same son.
Right. It could very well be. If you're talking about a junior high grad 3 days, that's probably a reach, Rich.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Timmy, let's move on. So your last installment, here's another scenario. Your last installment base is first in power, but you're afraid that if you give up some of your power guys, then your problem will shift. However, if you do nothing, you aren't going to win.
Well, you know, you can give up your power guys, or what you can do is you can look to add power guys to augment the ones you're trading. There's still power guys that are available on the wire in a lot of leagues that can provide some assistance. It's not like you're trading away a 10, 15 home run player right now and not picking up anything to replace it. You got to focus on that difference and find some power guys on the wire, or pick up some speculative speed guys and stash them for hopefully an eventual call-up.
Yeah, I kind of like that. There was one guy I know who just traded Bryce Harper, and it was in the Dynasty League, and he goes, look, you know, I'm desperate in pitching. I have a great offense and no pitching. So he got Bryce Harper. He got back Anthony Rizzo and Dallas Keuchel. I thought it was a really smart pick because he gets, you know, 80% of Bryce Harper with Rizzo, maybe 70%. But he also gets a really good pitcher, or at least having a great year. So there's a chance to make an impact to his pitching staff. And he doesn't go from 100% production to zero. He got something back that, you know, is a replacement, not as good. And I thought that was a really, really smart play by him.
Well, yeah, when you look at the end of the day, okay, how many home runs, RBIs, and runs scored is Harper going to produce? How many is Rizzo going to produce? It's not going to be a spectacular difference, is it? And if you augment from the wire on top of that, you might find yourself in a situation where you basically got Keuchel for nothing.
I think Keuchel's going to cost money, because I do think Harper has a chance to hit 45 home runs. I mean, let's say Rizzo does 30 and there's a 40-point difference in batting average. That's significant, but you get Dallas Keuchel out of the deal, and, you know, if you can afford that level of reduction in your offensive production, you win. That's the whole idea, Timmy. You win because you think, I can take a 10-home run reduction because I'm already ahead by 15, and, you know, I balance it out the season, I'm probably going to be okay.
Well, yeah, and the other thing I think that a lot of people really have to consider is, what you're trading for at this stage, especially in redraft leagues, what you're trading for is numbers, statistics, okay? Players have, like Bryce Harper, okay? He is a big name. You should get as much back as you possibly can for Bryce Harper, but you've got to look at the numbers that the players you're receiving will generate. Some of the best trades that I've ever made have been some of the most lopsided trades in my trading partner's favor that I've ever made. Yet at the end of the day, the numbers are there. And I think too many people get hung up on name association instead of what these players can do for your fantasy team. And, you know, hey, I'm not saying give Bryce Harper away for nothing, but if you can get three or four players combined that will generate a positive or a plus game, especially gain in a redraft league, I think you've got to entertain it. And sometimes people get too hung up on, I've got to get fair value. Well, fair value is the points you accumulate, right?
I totally agree. Totally agree. So, your final two questions. Give me two positional players you're high on for the rest of the year, and give me two pitchers that you're high on for the rest of the year.
Ah, If I was to buy low right now, I still got faith in the Cowboy. I think we're going to see something there. He's not going to be as bad as what we've seen. I'd find a way to get a hold of Mr. Calhoun if I could. Wow. Jonathan LaCroix has turned things around in the past week or two. You might be able to get yourself a nice buy on LaCroix. Castellanos has to be better. He simply has to be. There's a couple bats for you, Rich. As far as pitchers, I'm just hoping that we see Noah Syndergaard and Madison Bumgarner back sooner rather than later. How's that?
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, it's getting tough in pitching, Timmy, because when people are picking up Danielson Lament, and you know he had a really nice start. I mean, that's got top of your list. I mean, that's how brutal it is. I mean, there's the pitching is just feels like it's just gone. And guess what? Not a lot coming up from the minor leagues as well. I do like Brent Honeywell coming up, hopefully that June timeframe. But there's not a lot. I like Nick Kingham as well. But man, there's not a Noah Syndergaard in the minor leagues ready to come up.
Well, there's one pitcher in the minor leagues, and definitely he's worth taking a look and a search through your waiver wire, because Jameson Taillon, who I for one thought would be gone for an extended period of time, has been dropped in leagues. Now he's still sitting, I believe, somewhere around 69-70%. But I looked in two of my redraft leagues today, and one NFBC, and he's available. And today he pitched three innings at Altoona AA, walked one, allowed one hit, and struck out six. Give your player pool a scan, because if by chance somebody did drop Taillon, get him rostered and quick.
That's a brilliant call. I mean, good for him. I mean, that testicular cancer, I think that's what he had, testicular cancer. Sure, recovered fairly quickly from that. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And one thing I'm very, very glad to see happen today is that Joe Ross got beat up a little bit, because after his first start, he's another player that was dropped in a lot of leagues. And, you know, you take a look at Ross. I'm glad he had a rough outing today, because that should drive his price down in a couple of leagues that I'm looking at him in.
Yeah, very good call. Eric Fetty, the Nationals are going to move into the pen, Tim.
Well, yeah, and what that says to me is that they best ought to, and they are believing in Joe Ross, because if you look at what's happening at Syracuse right now, it is ugly. I think Voth is their leading ERA guy right now, and his ERA is a pinch below five. The pitching options at the minor league level for Washington are very, very poor right now. And by converting Fetty into a reliever for the balance of the year, like I said, they got to be believing in Joe Ross.
Yeah, well, Ronaldo Lopez is pitching extremely well in the minor leagues. He used to be on that team, Timmy. And Lucas Giolito, no-hitter this week. So two guys I bet you they wish they had somehow, some way back on their team.
You mean they're not happy with Adam Eaton right now?
Yeah, that's just a tough one, Timmy. That's a tough one. That hurts, Timmy.
It does. When you trade away that level of talent and trade away your pitching depth, and the player you get back gets hurt, that leaves a hole.
Let's talk about dynasty leagues. There's a email from a listener, Timmy. I'm in last place in my dynasty league, but I also understand I drafted super young and was playing a longer game. I don't really have any top 10 prospects, but I feel I have a solid minor system. I do have Bryce Harper as my stud player. My biggest struggle right now is trading. It makes me super nervous. I've had a few offers that have gotten that have not gotten me to pull the trigger, but I've sent out a couple that did get accepted. So a couple of questions come to mind. In sending offers, do I worry about offending people and asking for too much? What's your thought on that, Tim?
He's a top 10 player. How much is too much? The more you can get for him, the merrier. If I own Bryce Harper or any of the top 10 players in the game and was looking to move them, hey, I'd want a king's ransom. You're in a situation where two things happen. Either you get what you want or you've got Bryce Harper. Either way, you're a winner. So I wouldn't be worried about offending anybody. The sky's the limit when it comes to players in a dynasty league of that caliber.
So let's just talk about in general. So redraft leagues, dynasty league, keeper leagues, no matter what. Do you ever worry about sending an offer that's just a lowball offer, such as Francis Martez for – I forgot who you were trying to get from me. But, yeah, I mean, do you ever worry Craig Kimbrell, do you ever worry that you've offended a person by sending an offer? I mean, should anybody feel that way?
I thought that was a good offer.
Okay. No, I think it's a legitimate question. I mean, because particularly dynasty, you're hopefully in this for the long run, and you don't want to have bad feelings in the league, but you also are trying to get the most you can for your players.
Well, yeah, I guess when I had a feeling that your love for Kimbrel was not that strong, and I know that you really like Marte. So I didn't feel that it was out of line. Had I thought it was out of line, I wouldn't make it because that's, as a rule, not the style of game I play. I don't – well, usually when I make a trade offer, I'm looking at a team that has needs, and I'm looking at trying to fill mine and trying to reach some sort of a semblance of balance. And in dynasty leagues, I tend to lower – the value of closers rather significantly and lower them even further in a league that counts holds.
Interesting. So let me broaden the conversation because I do think you can offend people with at least maybe I'm easily offendable, Timmy, because sometimes I will in leagues, people will send me an offer that's, I've got Mike Trout, for instance, and they offer me, you know, some nobody for him. And then they'll say, just starting the conversation. No, then I'll reject and say, come on, you got to be crazy. They'll respond back and go, I'm just starting the conversation. Well, I think you got to start the conversation from a reasonable point of view, not say, look, here's a bag of balls for the best player in baseball. You got to, like, I think, structure a deal where you articulate, hey, this is how it's going to help you. This is how it's going to help me. And as long as you've got some thoughtfulness around the offer, the person rejects it, the person rejects it, or if you reject it, that's fine. But just like saying, right, random, here's a random blind trade offer, most of the times that's not going to be accepted because people will be offended, I think.
Well, yeah, I generally, as a rule, when I make a trade, I look to find a team that has a surplus in something I need. And I look at something that I have that I believe will fill a need on their team. And when you start talking like, you know, I offered you a bag of balls for Mike Trout, well, I would never make an offer like that. What I would do is I would just send an email out, hey, what do you want for Mike Trout, rather than sending an offer. Or send one out that I felt was at least a reasonable starting point. Because if you offer up crap, quite often you're just going to lose the person's attention, and that's not the goal of the exercise. You know, I know when I looked at the Marte for Kimbrel, I actually thought that was a really good offer because I know how high you are on the Houston system and Marte, and I actually thought you were going to jump all over that one, Rich. I read that one totally wrong.
No, I'm telling you, please, I didn't take offense. So don't even think for a moment that I did, if that's where you're heading with this, because I'm not at all.
I perceived that to be a reasonable offer. I wasn't a low ball.
No, it's a high-end pitcher. Totally agree with you. I thought Craig Kimbrel. I didn't want Francis Marte for Craig Kimbrel. That in the end, that's what it got down to. But I wasn't offended by it.
Sure.
First, I would never be offended by anything you said because we have a relationship. But in particularly like newer leagues or redraft leagues where you don't know anybody, that's where you can really easily offend, and you're going to get the comment, asshole, and then the person's never going to respond back to you. I mean, it happens all the time. So I think explaining your position and, like, you know, trying to make it a win-win for everybody, even though it could be concocted, at least you're showing, hey, I'm trying to make this work for both of us because you want it to work for the other guy. You just don't want to say, hey, this is all about me. And sometimes I get trade offers where it's clearly all about the other person. It's like, dude, come on, why would I do this? Why would I want to do this? And usually you get crickets when you ask that question.
Well, yeah, another part of the problem, part of the equation, Rich, is because of the fact that we're involved in the industry and we spend a good chunk of our time evaluating talent and you know, in your case, scouting everybody down to low A, people have a tendency, I think, to sometimes, when you make an offer, okay, they think you know something more than you do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well,
I become very, very reserved.
For me personally, Tim, I have to overpay for anybody. I cannot make a straight trade with anyone. It's just the burden that I've got, right, because of who I am and what you and I do, and so, because everybody thinks that, and I can't do a fair trade. I just can't. I mean, everybody's like, wait a minute, you know something I don't know, and I no. And I'm like, no, he's really not that good. Trust me. No, he is, because you want to. Well, there's somebody else, and no, I don't want to do it. It's like, I'm going to get screwed.
Yeah. You're trying to fill a hole on your team with a mediocre player, and this mediocre player all of a sudden is looked upon as being the next Mike Trout, right?
Yeah. Even the great Dr. Mrsek, I remember we were in trade talks once. I can't remember what it was. And I said, I really like this player, and he's like, well, I wasn't really high on him, but I got to rethink this now. And it's like, no, I just like him. I don't think he's the next Mike Trout. I like him. I think maybe he'll be an major league player. And it's like, and Dr. Mrsek's probably doing research, looking at everything, going, oh, my, what am I missing? What am I missing? And he comes back and goes, yeah, he's okay. I don't really. Yeah, I know. He's just okay. It's like,
oh, yes. Sometimes all we're doing, Rich, is trying to fill holes on our team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me. Here's his next question is, what's your philosophy on trading a relief pitcher like Kota Glover? I think I've already gotten your opinion. Because he is young, would you keep him? Or given that I'm in last place and how in flux closes are, do you think about swapping him? Tim, in a dynasty league, you devalue closers a little bit. So you would tell him to kind of go for gusto here.
Well, yeah, you know, if you're looking at competing 2, 3, 4 years down the road, how important are closers? How many of them are signed to 3-year agreements or longer? Not very many of them. The only one I can think of on a 5-year deal right now is Chapman. So if you're looking at building a team for 3 to 5 years out, I would be converting every closer I possibly could to some sort of a starting pitcher or a bat. Move them on out and get as much as you can. You've got 2 years plus to find your closers. You'll find them, especially in a league that uses a combination of saves and holds.
I'm in first place in one of our dynasty leagues, Tim. It's another one. And I was in last place 3 years ago and going through a massive rebuild, and everything just came together. Came together probably a year before I thought it would come together. And the last piece that I had, the last piece I added was closers. I was lucky enough to get Greg Holland off during the redraft that we had, and I got Kota Glover, and I just traded for Kelvin Herrera. So I'm sitting pretty now, and it was the last piece that I added. When I realized that I had enough to go for it, I needed stolen bases, and I needed closers. Everything else was in play. Once I needed those two assets, I took the Yoan Moncadas of the world and guys that I had collected and said, okay, I'm going for it. And I'm sitting in first place now, Tim, and that looks pretty good unless I get injuries. And closers was the last piece I added.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. You can take over the course of, like even this year, if you take a look at who is slotted in as the closer leaving spring training versus who is in the closer role today, and we see it every year. We see 25 to 30% turnover. Pick up a couple setup guys the year before you feel you're ready to contend. Make an off-season trade for at least one solid closer. You can solve your closer problem in the space like you did of basically 1 year, maybe even one off-season, one burst at the beginning of a year. I got going in one league this year basically with no closers, and I've now got Casilla, Glover, and I can't remember who the other one is. You can find saves. In a dynasty league, hey, a guy like Kota Glover could fetch you potentially to the right team some solid chips for 2 years down the road. Like, and I mean some really, really good minor league talent.
Totally agree. This league I'm talking about, Timmy, I'm looking, I had a total of, as a dynasty league, Rotisserie, I was in 12th place with a total of 73 points. I was 54 points, 73 points behind the first place. That's how bad it was. I had 13 points in saves. Three points in saves. I had the third worst. I surprised I even had 23 saves. I'm not sure how I got that, Timmy, because I didn't have any closers. So I think I randomly just picked up some saves here and there. And it wasn't until this year that I actually made a run at it.
Well, yeah. And like I said, hey, if I owned Kota Glover and I was rebuilding, I'd be shopping him. I'd be shopping him right away. What I would be doing if I was looking at rebuilding is I would be picking up every setup guy known to man. I'd be picking up Soria. I'd be picking up Rivero in Pittsburgh. Pick up all those guys because you can then, if they do end up in a closing situation, and in those two cases, I think odds are reasonably good that they will, then you flip them. You keep flipping players for assets until you finally need a bullpen and then go out and buy it.
Brilliant, brilliant thought there, Timmy. Here's his last question. I'm going to answer it first. Do you have any metrics to help you in trading major league for minor leaguers to help gauge value? I have several bites on guys like, he gives a couple of guys that are out there, but don't quite know how to value them compared to minor league guys. So here's my, and I've studied this a lot, Timmy, and I play in five dynasty leagues. Every one of them values minor league players versus major league players differently. That's the bummer thing about it. Some leagues will value minor league players like they're gold. Even low A guys. Oh my God, I'm not going to give up on fill in the blank. Top 100 guys I'm primarily talking about. But and then there are other leagues who really value major league guys, and it's like you've got to give up to get a Rougned Odor, who is a good player. You know, I mean, fine player. You've got to give up Yoan Moncada. And Lucas Giolito and three other guys. I mean, they're so expensive. You need to find out in a new dynasty league, it's hard, but you need to find out what players are really going for. That's been my experience. It's really tough, particularly in the beginning, to trade minor leaguers for major league. You need to set the market for that.
Yeah, that makes total sense because I'm experiencing the same thing. It depends on the league. It depends on the players. A lot depends on how the league is shaking down. The toughest part is that first 2 to 3 months of a new league, because everybody is feeling everything out, and you don't really have, in most cases, a solid definition until you get, at least 2 months into the season, maybe even three, how the top tier versus the middle tier versus the bottom tier are going to shake down. And I think until you get that definition, it really, really limits how you value minor leaguers versus major leagues. I know in my case right now in the new DL5, we're sitting about mid-pack, and we have some really great minor league talent. Are we going to move it? Possibly, but not right now. If a month from now we're sitting in fourth within 15 points of the league, you will see me shopping minor league talent for anything that improves my odds to win, because I want to win. I don't care how many minor leaguers I've stashed. What I care about is how I can convert those minor leaguers to assets to win me a league. So in new leagues, it takes a while for that definition, but again, I always play for now. You know, I'll hang a flag up. I don't care what it costs me to have a flag hanging, Rich. You can, each and every year we see 1,000 minor leaguers drafted. We see players coming over from Cuba, from Asia. There's no shortage of players. So I guess my big thing is, hey, I will convert any minor leaguer I can to an asset if it allows me to win.
It's like Theo Epstein said, Timmy, I don't want prospects, I want rings. So, you know, it's like at some point you got to know when to do that. And I think what people will find, particularly this gentleman I know is in a startup dynasty league, what the league generally finds the more mature they get is young major league talent under the age of 32, 31 are incredibly valuable. So it's not the Carlos Beltrans aren't that valuable. They're nice little final pieces that you put to the puzzle to try to push you over the top. But also minor leaguers aren't that valuable either. Yeah, Yoan Moncada is, but not a lot of guys are, Kimmy, because you just don't know who's going in the end, who's going to make it and who's not.
Well, yeah, where does Rowdy Tellez fit into the picture right now? You know what I mean? Like, hey, he could be a 25 home run hitter at 25-90 at first base for the Jays, or he could be a career minor leaguer, right?
Paul Goldschmidt, before he got called up, Timmy, was not in the CBS database. Not in the CBS database, because I know, because I added him in the only dynasty league that we had at that point. Anyway, there's probably two of them. I added him in either one or both leagues, because it was a manual ad, and I got him. And he's turned out to be one of the top two players in all of baseball. And this is a guy that no one had heard of. Same thing with Jose Altuve. Guys like that happen all the time. And sometimes, you know, the Yasiel Puigs of the world turn out to be Yasiel Puig. And, you know, we're getting better at evaluating and all of that. But my point is, you can't bet it all on young kids, because that's a failed strategy. You got to find the right blend. And you also have to know when to truly go for it. And when you got one or two categories, you're playing a rotisserie league, one or two categories left to go, that's when you start selling everything off. But make sure you got some really high-end guys, because, again, a top 150 prospect ain't going to get it done. No one's going to care about that. People will care about top 10, top 50 prospects, those names as Ian Happs of the world, who you just knew were going to be really good. But nobody cares about Rowdy Tellez at the moment. They just don't. He doesn't have that kind of value.
Well, no, because he's not right now close to the show. A guy like Tyler Beattie has more value than Tellez by a long shot, because could be up in the next month.
So Rowdy Tellez has no value, but he has true value because he could be really good when he gets up. A cat can hit. He's got some pop. But you can't turn him for Craig Kimbrell. You can't do that, even though 5 years from now he might be better than Craig Kimbrell. He might have more value. He might be the next Paul Goldschmidt. I don't think he is. But you can't, when you're trading in the Dynasty League, you shouldn't trade those guys. You should hold on to them because they don't have enough value to trade, but you think they actually want to do something. Does that make sense to them?
Yeah, and in a roundabout, colluded way, yeah, I think so.
When we get back, we're going to talk about the waiver wire and young Mr. David Price. I've got more tweets about David Price. I've seen surveys on Facebook. Do I start David Price next week? He has not been good in his rehab starts, Timmy. He's got a two-start week this week, though. The world wants to know, what the heck do I do with David Price for next week?
Well, you know, I've thought long and hard about this, and my first reaction was, it's a two-start week. Wheel him out there. But, man, he has looked absolutely terrible. He really has, Rich. And the more and more I think about it, hey, if you're in a situation where you got challenges with ERA whip, well, how much damage can he do, I guess? But I'm leaning right now to sitting him. The rehab wasn't really good. And I think he's got Baltimore, I think, in his second start. And there's a team that can hit the ball a long ways. So I'd be leaning to sit David Price, even though my initial reaction was to wheel him out there because of the two starts. You know, if you're in tight in the ERA and whip, I wouldn't take the chance.
He's got the White Sox at Chicago. So
yeah,
which isn't good, right? I mean, the White Sox can't hit. Jose Abreu a lot better than he was the first 3 weeks of the season. So, I mean, it's a tough call. I own him in one league, Timmy. It's a league that, again, where I talked about top of the show, where I've improved a lot in ERA and whip. I need David Price. I need a strikeout. I'm scared to death. I still haven't decided yet, but I'm leaning towards starting him.
Well, you know what? I guess the easiest way of looking at it is what is the worst that can happen? What is the best that can happen? Make your decision based on your particular league specific situation, Rich.
Yeah, I think one of the starts is going to be really, really bad. That's what I think. Hopefully the other one will be good enough that he doesn't completely implode. But I'm going to go with tomorrow, given, I don't know if the White Sox played, and I know they played Detroit. I don't know if it was home or away. But maybe the White Sox will be tired. Maybe they'll sneak a game. I don't know, Timmy.
I'll tell you one thing, Rich. Abisail Garcia rested today. That means he'll be hungry tomorrow. How's that?
Oh, there you go. That's interesting, Timmy. That's very, very interesting. Let's get to your waiver wire, which hopefully will be up sometime tomorrow at 4 a.m., 6 a.m. Tim is putting the final touches on that. First guy on the list is I watched his game, and I was trying to remember how to pronounce it. Now I think it's Danelson Lamet. I've never seen this guy pitch in the minor leagues. I do own him on one dynasty league just because he was all the rage coming through the minor leagues in the month of April. He played the Mets. The Mets, you know, they can be pitched to. He was hitting 98 miles an hour, Timmy. I saw it with my own eyes. I don't know if he's as good. He plays for the Padres, who were horrendous. But it's a guy that you've got to pick up.
Well, yeah, he lasted 5 innings and he didn't get hammered. 8 strikeouts. The stuff looked good. Control is going to be an issue, I think, Rich. He's going to walk a few, and it's going to bite him at times. But based on what we've seen coming out of San Diego for the most part, I think he's got a good chance to stick in that rotation and be a decent 4 or 5.
You also have Brad Peacock down, Timmy. We already talked about that. I mean, it's going well. It's going very, very well. And I think he's a guy that I would definitely be picking up for sure. Tony Walters. 60% owned, past 7 games, 5 for 19, 7 base on ball, 7 runs scored. Second catcher is a guy that we've always liked in Colorado and a guy that you're suggesting people go pick up.
Well, yeah, you know, if you want to make a quick couple bucks, okay, bet somebody that they can't tell you who is leading the catcher position in runs scored. And it's easy money. Nobody will ever guess Walters, but right now he is leading all catchers in runs scored with 22.
That's a great stat, Timmy. His teammate, Germán Márquez, who I got a chance to see last August in Double-A Trenton in a game where the Colorado Rockies Double-A team came in. Timmy, I'm sitting there, I went with friends, and my wife was included. So it wasn't as much scouting as it was trying to scout and trying to talk at the same time. And this guy gave up six runs in the first inning. I'm like, who is this guy? Let's see what he's got going on. And then Timmy, the next 6 innings, he didn't give up a hit. His stuff was just lightning, man. It was 96, 97 with a really good off-speed pitch. And I've always liked him. I don't like him in Coors Field, but I like the pitcher a lot.
Well, you know, he got off to a rough start. I didn't think he was going to get number 4 in after allowing 13 runs in his first 3 starts. Basically, 13 runs were in 2 starts of those first 3. But in his past 4, he's only allowed 4 earned runs. He settled down real nice. And he's got to be owned. And right now, he's only owned in 47% of the leagues at CBS. So there's an opportunity.
Ryan Tapera with the Toronto Blue Jays. Tim, if you go to CBS in almost every deep league and you put the highest-ranked free agent, Ryan Tapera's name is coming up. Who is Ryan Tapera?
Ryan Tapera is right now probably behind Joe Smith and Grilly looking at a setup situation in Toronto, but I believe he's going to, by year's end, pass both of those guys, if not sooner. You're looking at a strikeout per inning. He's getting holds. I think he's now got 5 holds, 1 save. And I've had the opportunity to watch him a lot lately, and I like what I've seen. He goes after batters, and in that Toronto bullpen, I think he's got a chance to move into the setup role at some point in time. So if you got and especially in a dynasty league, if you got an opportunity to stash a guy, he's not garnering any attention right now, but I think he will.
Yeah, and get me the K's for sure. Allen,
yep.
Cordova, Timmy, with San Diego, Manny Margot getting his spot to playing time. They brought up Franchi, one of my favorite Franchi. What's his last name?
Cordero.
Franchi. Pardon me?
Cordero.
Yeah, Cordero. That's right. Franchi Cordero. One of my favorites. Can't remember how to say his last name because I'm looking at Cordova and trying to not mispronounce either one's name. But Cordova got the start, at least on Friday night.
Well, the thing is, who's San Diego going to roll into the leadoff spot? Yeah, the kid's been quietly getting it done. If you're looking at very, very deep leagues, I could see him batting out of the leadoff role until Margot's ready to roll. So, you know, in really deep leagues, if you're looking for some speed or NL only, he's worth a spin.
Jorge Bonifacio, Timmy, playing better than I thought he would, hitting a lot of home runs. He's got tremendous power, no speed like his brother Emilio has. But he might be is he the only bright spot at the moment on the Kansas City Royals?
It's not Alex Gordon. I would tend to agree, and Herrera.
Yeah, Herrera. I mean, boy, Danny Duffy looks like an all-star pitcher one day and looks like the worst pitcher in the league the next day. It's just he is nothing if not inconsistent, Tim.
Well, yeah, definitely he's consistent in his inconsistencies.
You got a couple other names, and we'll let people read about that. Final guy is Nick Kingham, which you've already mentioned before. I'm totally supportive of this one because I think it's going to happen. I think there's major changes coming for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think there's going to be a massive sell, and I think Garrett Cole could be one of those guys that gets moved, at least everything that the rumors that you're hearing. And Nick Kingham could be an interesting call-up in the second half.
Well, yeah, and you look at Chad Kuhl, who's anything but. He's got an ERA north of 6. At some point in time, Pittsburgh's going to have to make a move, and Kingham pitched another solid outing today, 3 wins in his 4 starts, 2.35 ERA. I like Nick Kingham in Pittsburgh because I think he's going to get the opportunities.
I agree. I totally agree. It's interesting. Chad Kuhl really throws hard. He just can't find the plate.
Well, yeah, and lately when he's found the plate, he's found dead center, and that's hard to do consistently.
Yeah, we call that lack of command. His average fastball is 95.17. So when you have poor command and leak it over the center of the plate, it gets hit very hard. By the way, Tyler Glasnow pitching a lot better over the recent weeks. I mean, just saying.
Yeah, he certainly is. You know who else has really picked it up in the past couple of weeks because I've been tracking him is Austin Meadows. He's on a real tear right now.
Really, really nice player. Both those guys. So there's some guys that are I think they will eventually move Andrew McCutchen because they're not picking up his $20 million deal for next year. I don't know what they'll get for him. Hopefully McCutchen will get some Babbitt run here and allow the Pittsburgh Pirates to kind of get a player in exchange. But Meadows will be a nice recall on that. And Tyler Glasnow, Tim, if you go read my article entering about Rookie of the Years, I keep telling everybody just be patient with the guy. Makes me a little nervous. He's got a tattoo on the inside of his lip. Be patient with a guy. There's too much to like about him.
Yeah, there is, except for the tattoo. I'll agree there. It's funny the way we look at young players, and you know we see players coming up at 21 and 22, and you know sometimes they don't have that great initial success, but the year after that, and the year after that, they're still only 22, 23, 24. It seems awful young to be writing players off. And so many times as we move from one bright, shiny bauble to the next, it in fact happens.
Absolutely, Tammy. And we see that. I agree with you all the time. And with Glasnow, they don't throw that hard. They're not that tall with that kind of extension to the plate very often. He's got terrible control, and part of it is just because he's so daggone tall. Once he figures that out, I think he will because he's athletic enough to figure that out. He's going to be a really good pitcher. It might happen in the second half. It might happen in 2019. But I think one day it's going to happen. You just got to, if you're in dynasty leagues, you got to be patient with this guy. If you're a redraft league, see, if you've got room, which most people don't because of all the injuries, he's a guy that you just kind of hide on your in your reserve and wait until he starts to really put it together. And he is a little bit.
When do you think we're going to see Moncada, Rich?
Well, he's injured at the moment, so he hit the DL. I forgot what it was, but I'm thinking he played in what 20 games last year, so he'll be more like a middle of July guy. So assuming he comes back healthy, I think we're still 4 to 6 weeks away from seeing Yoan Moncada.
Sounds fair to me. I was just curious on that one because I do have him stashed in one league, and as hard as it is to believe, I could actually use some speed.
Yeah, I know. Mr. Speed Whore. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Moncada, I mean, the fact that he's injured is what's tough. I haven't heard that he's back yet, but ready to return to the Knights lineup. So that was yesterday. So maybe he returned today. So it's getting close. So it looks like just a temporary setback to me. So, but I'm thinking 4 to 6 weeks out, that's not terrible. I think you can see him run around the All-Star break.
Well, yeah. The other, you know, another player I can't find any information on whatsoever is Charlie Tilson. Like, what's happened to Charlie Tilson? He was in a walking boot. It was supposed to be removed, but I cannot find a grain of information as far as any updates on Charlie Tilson. And I know he's going to be a fantasy god at some point in time. What's up with that?
Well, I mean, he moved to the 60-day DL, so that means it's at least June 1st. But there's no word of him out of the boot and playing. I don't think he's logged. He's not logged in at bat. The last I had noticed.
Yeah, no, I. It's almost like he's disappeared from the face of the earth.
You know, guys come back slowly from injury. So, yeah, he has not played yet. So even if he came back this week, Timmy, you're talking July at the earliest, but it's not looking good. This is a guy that in 2012, I think maybe 2011, I mean, he was lost for the entire season. In fact, I think it was 2 years he hardly played at all just because of massive injuries. So the guy plays all out, gets injured a lot. So tons of speed, tons of athleticism, but can't stay healthy at the moment.
Well, yeah, and I know as soon as I get him back, my tote worst team's going to take off, Rich.
Last I looked, Timmy, you moved up a level, right? You moved up a spot.
Yeah, I'm now resting comfortably in 13th, still trying to find some pitching. The offense is okay. Eventually I'll get Chapman back, so I'll have three closers. I'm okay there, but the loss of Noah Syndergaard, Quintana's shaky season, Carlos Rodon not pitching yet. The combination of all of that, my starting pitching is just butt ugly. I'm aiming in tote for a finish of 75 points because that doesn't cost me a penalty when I'm looking at Fab going into next year.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Is there relegation, Timmy? Can you have a chance of being kicked out of the league if you don't perform well enough?
No, as long as you're active and play the game, yeah, there's never any issues there. But what happens is there's a 75-point cutoff on the FAB. And for every point you finish under 75, you lose a portion of your FAB budget for the next season.
Wow.
So, you know, if I'm not mistaken, 50 points would probably, you'd end up with, I think it's around 700 in FAB instead of the full 1,000. I want to try and have that full 1,000 FAB for next spring. And it's actually, I think, a very good idea in redraft leagues or redraft formats where you have a lot of continuation amongst the players. It sort of provides an incentive to play the whole year because who wants to start, you know, with less FAB than the other guy? I like the idea.
Well, Timmy, I'm looking at the standings. I don't think you have a worry about finishing last. I don't think I've ever seen somebody have 19.5 points. Jeff Bogus, the 15th guy, he's got 1 point in run, 2.5 points in home runs, 2 points in RBI, 2 points in stolen base, 1 point in OBP. 3 points in wins, 5 points in saves, 1 point in ERA, 1 point whip, 1 point. How can you be that bad across all categories? I've never seen that before. You get 10 points to start off with. He's earned 9.5 points.
A slew of injuries in an active league, and it can occur. I feel for Jeff. He's really, really having a tough year, Rich. But, you know, you get nailed with 4 or 5 injuries, and you look at a waiver wire that's incredibly active with people buying, you know, each and every single week. It's a very, very active league. And, man, it can be tough. If you want the right player, you're not going to get them for peanuts. Brad Hand was drafted 3 weeks ago in this league. There's a lot of sharp players. And if you're not very active and if you're not very proactive, it's tough. It really is. It's a good league. A lot of good players.
So I remember, Tim, I was in eighth grade. You would appreciate this because you know me fairly well. So we had an eighth grade social studies teacher who had a test. The test had, I think it was 30 or 40 multiple questions on it. He said that if you get all of them right, you get 100%. If you get all of them wrong, you get 100%. So in other words, if you want to take the risk that you think you know all the answers and you get every one of them wrong, then I have to assume that you knew what every answer was. And no one could get them all wrong. So, of course, Tim, I took the challenge. And I got one. I got let's say it was 30 questions. I got 29 wrong and one right. It was a very difficult conversation to my parents why I got not a failing grade, but a really failing grade. I almost feel that way in the case of Mr. Bogus. Is it Bogus or Jeff Bogus or Bogus?
Yeah.
I almost feel like he should get some kind of award if he scores like 10 points, he should get an award because that's impossible. I don't think you can't go into a season going, I'm going to try to get 10 points. I think he should try to do that and like set the bar so low and get some award. That's my suggestion.
Well, yeah, and the award he'll get will be $200 instead of $1,000 in FAB next year, right?
Wow, that would be brutal, jeez. Timmy, it's a wrap, buddy. This has been a great show. Thank you so much for letting me interview you. I thought you just really brought it. Guys, Tim is a champion of talent. He wins leagues all over the place. Listen to what he says. Don't listen to anything I say. Listen to what Tim says on these strategies and go back and listen to that section over and over again because I think there's a lot of wisdom in there. Timmy, what you got going on this week?
This week I'm off to the big cities. It's time to begin rehab. I've got an appointment on Wednesday with the cardio rehab team on Thursday. I'm going to feel like a hamster because I'm doing the treadmill bit. Stress test time on Thursday. And Friday I've got an appointment with my cardiologist. And looking forward to getting the traveling out of the way, getting a solid program in place and moving forward. I'm feeling a lot better and it's time to take the next step. And on top of that, the bonus is we're staying with the kids and we get to spend time with the grandkids, Rich. So I'm
That's
really
awesome.
Looking forward to this week.
That's awesome. So Timmy, are you going to be put on an exercise program? I'm assuming, I'm assuming you haven't been doing any of that, but once you get checked out, I'm assuming if your heart's working okay, then they put you on some type of exercise program to build up your stamina?
Well, I think it's a lack of size rather than extra size. I've already got the exercise. It's not a problem.
There you go. So, but anyway, we wish you the best, Mr. McLeod, and give me a text or an email. Give me the thumbs up that everything's good with that stress test. And have you ever been hooked up to all those wires and gizmos?
Yeah, multiple times, Rich. I was in a plane ride I took about 2 months ago.
No, but like the stress test where they do put you on the treadmill and then you have to lay down real quickly, then they look at your heart. It's all kinds of stuff, man. It's a lot of work. You're gonna be tired.
I've never done a stress test before, so I'm really not sure what to look forward to, other than reading through the pamphlet I got and talking to my doctor briefly I'm looking forward to it, but like I said, it's something I've never gone through before. No.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's a piece of cake. There's no pain in it at all. It's just, I mean, you got to get your heart up to, I forgot what, you know, maybe it's different after coming off of a heart attack, but yeah, they want to get your heart moving up. And Tim, you know, you have to like walk faster, run. You're going to be tired.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the last thing I've jogged was my memory, and I'm going to have some work cut out for me for sure. There's no doubt about that, but I think I'm up for the challenge. Me and my 80%er, we're good to go, Rich.
All right, Timmy. Well, be well, enjoy that, and we'll be here, everybody, next Sunday talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking whatever the heck we want to talk about. Timmy, be well.
Be well, Rich.